Welcome to the Evolution of Leaders podcast. My name is Darwin Lee, and I am a coach and speaker. I'm the founder of the Evolution of Leaders. On this podcast, I'm interested in exploring the traits, habits, or behaviors that set apart elite performers through their stories and in their own words. I had the pleasure of interviewing Jonah Hall. He's an extremely accomplished athlete and coach, is currently head coach of Triathlon Canada, headed towards the Tokyo Olympics. In 2012 for London, he was the head coach for USA Triathlon. 2008 Beijing, he was a coach with the Australian national team, and in 1997, he was the world duathlon champion. He's an example of an elite athlete who's become an elite coach. I was really impressed with how humble he was, but also how he was able to take really complex ideas and explain them simply in layman's terms, just really an effective communicator. And before the interview, we had a couple tech issues, but we got those sorted out. But throughout, just calm and gracious, and what you see is what you get with Jono. I appreciated so much the time that he spent with us. For those of us who are working in teams or maybe leading them, I was fascinated with how he blends individual efforts in an individual sport, but with a heavy emphasis on a tremendous team dynamic. Just really great insights there. He's truly a world-class master, not only coaching, but also building and leading teams. I hope you enjoy this interview.
Jono, how are you?
Oh, I'm really well. Thanks, Darwin. And it's a pleasure to be with you today.
Thanks very much for being here. We're excited to have you. So as we get started, can you give us a one-minute introduction, just kind of your CV and your resume and what you're about?
Well, I'm currently employed as head coach for Triathlon Canada. So I run the Olympic program, but I've come through 30 years now of experience working in high-performance sport, initially as an athlete and then moving into the coaching pathway. So I've attended multiple Olympic Games, Commonwealth Games, World Championships in those two capacities. And obviously 30 years is now, it's gone fast, but it's a long time. And from that, I've had a wealth of experience.
So from your CV, I can see that you've been to quite a few Olympics, going right back to Beijing and London, Rio, and right to present day, which is going to be Tokyo, whenever that is.
No, that's correct. I mean, they're the games that I've attended in the coaching capacity. I was involved in the Athens Games with Triathlon Australia and then had that games experience as an athlete as well. And so, yeah, those major games are obviously at the pinnacle of kind of what we do in my realm in working, whether it's in administration or coaching in sport.
As we're talking here and recording, it's during this time of the coronavirus self-isolation. Tokyo Olympics have been delayed. So as a coach, how have you adapted your team's kind of attitude-wise or mentally to deal with this?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that initially dealing with the uncertainty, and the way I approached it was to, I guess, acknowledge and embrace the uncertainty. Normally in times where you find yourself where something's not clear, the first task is to try and clarify things and try and come up with some concrete things. And obviously with what we're going through now, there's the inability to do that. And so the first thing I worked on with my group was to kind of break down that initial resistance or those initial habits of looking for something concrete to anchor on and acknowledging that, we were going to be dealing with the unknowns, and that was going to be very different to how we dealt in the past. And as we approached some things that became concrete or things that became known to us, then we could revert back to our, traditional or standard practices. And I think the athletes seem to respond very well to that. I think that I've seen a variety of trains of thought where people have tried to, create knowns or create something to anchor on. And I found that very difficult at this time. So I took a little bit of a different approach and maybe a little bit left of field. I'm not sure, but it certainly has worked with my athletes. And then obviously off the back of that, as a coach, what I'm able to do is I'm able to create some very known concrete things that we do every day. And I went into this creating a pattern of routine and schedule, so that my athletes could, remain on task. And then obviously the big thing was reminding them that for us, it's a postponement. It's not a cancellation. And so the goals and the ambitions stayed the same. The date just changed, and, reminding them that these were their goals. And so from that, it was actually quite easy to keep them on task. And like I said, I didn't sugarcoat anything, or I didn't try to make anything, sound better than it potentially was, because I think the initial month was quite difficult, but we dealt with, honestly and with the facts that we did have, and, the fact that we're in an unprecedented period where things we've done in the past aren't necessarily going to work, and timelines are very difficult to predict.
As you move forward, how does adaptation kind of aside from the attitude and kind of helping your athletes mentally deal with this and yourself as well, how does adaptation apply to the way you've trained your athletes?
Yeah, that's a good question. The adaptation, from my perspective with these athletes, has been we've been forced to adapt to our process in the past is, you know, we've had a process with a clear end date. And the big adaption has been to maintain that process without the clarity of an end date. And obviously it's been a little bit more challenging for the younger athletes than say for someone who's had that experience. But that's been the key shift and the key point that we've had to change is and adapt to is that while we've kind of gone back to a process and we're working through this process initially, and obviously we do now with an announcement on the games date, but that's only one date out of a potential, you know, 20 dates that we would normally focus on through the year with competition. And so adapting, you know, how we think about it and how we work and how we focus on the process irrespective of the outcome. And I think it's been a really, I mean, ironically, it's been quite a useful experience, but it has tested the athletes because there's been this kind of rote way of looking at things and saying, you know, this is the process and this is the date at which we need to execute on that process. Whereas what we're doing now a little bit more is saying, this is the process. We're not clear on what the end date will be. And the way we approach it is, you know, we've contemplated, well, does that change the process? And I think what we came back to was that it doesn't change the process at all. The reason for some of our success has been based on the strength of our process. And just because we don't have an end date or a clear end date, while it was tempting to potentially change the process, we've made a decision not to. So from our little microclimate, that's been the biggest adaption that we've had to make. And I think at the end of the day, and it's not just about finding a silver lining and everything that's going on, but I think it's given the athletes a bigger skill set now where clearly they can perform when they have clarity and they have that very structured duration and time frame of when they need to perform. But on the flip side, if I can teach them to perform when maybe there isn't that clarity, then that's going to enhance their skill set. Ideally, we're not in that situation ever again, or we don't have these situations again where we're not dealing with clear deadlines or clear dates when we're asked to perform. But it adds to their repertoire, you know, their repertoire of skills should we ever come into that situation.
It's interesting what you say because you're implying that you're drawing lessons even through, you know, this time that can be viewed as a positive in some way. If we can take that and expand on that, how do the top athletes, and you work with absolutely top athletes, world-class elite athletes, how do the top athletes and coaches such as yourself maximize learning from failure?
I think it's a concept and it's a philosophy that either you have or you don't have. I guess one of the things that I personally bring to the table, or I've been told I personally bring to the table in the leadership role, is that I'm very honest about my experiences to date as an athlete and coach. And I would say that I learned more from my failures than I did from my successes. And I'm quite happy. And I think, again, you know, I feel, but I've also been told that I'm prepared to be vulnerable. So I've always been quite open about, you know, acknowledging where I failed. But in that process, for me, I've also acknowledged that they were the key lessons or the key learning moment. And so obviously we tend to gravitate towards positive outcomes. And I'm someone who gravitates towards positivity. However, you can get positivity, or I believe you can get positivity, or you can create positivity out of what others would see, or you could, you know, you could describe as a failure. And so I think when you look at that piece, it enables me to create a learning moment from whatever situation we're in. And one of the challenges of that, and one of the things I'm very conscious of, is that I'm setting my athletes to succeed, but I'm conscious that I don't make it so that they never fail. And obviously I don't set them up to fail. But what I'm getting is I don't do absolutely everything for them so that they don't have the same opportunities at some stage where they, you know, they don't learn from that, you know, that opportunity where they failed. But obviously what I've tried to do is make sure the failures don't happen at a critical point in time or a critical event or that are at a catastrophic level. So I think that, you know, that taking those learning moments from whatever's going on, like good, bad, indifferent, rain, hail, shine, in this case, obviously what's going on with this pandemic, I think is a skill set that is underpinned by a philosophy that, you know, that's our intent. And I think once you have intent and you can action on that, then it will lead to things.
Okay, so it's a philosophy as well as really an attitude, a way of how you approach things, whatever happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a philosophy, you know, supported by an attitude and then, you know, and further supported by some actions around that. And so It's interesting. A lot of people refer to, you know, the positive times in their careers, whatever that career may be. And while I do that, I just haven't taken a step away from, or I've acknowledged that actually, for me personally, those biggest moments have been, or the biggest learning moments have actually been through failures, which at the time were difficult to obviously process, but it's less of a burden when you actually have the ability to look at and say, okay, from this, I can actually rebound, learn something and come back and be better.
Okay, excellent. And so, and you yourself coached a number of athletes who have done very well at world-class events, medaled at the Olympics, which is outstanding. You yourself in 1997 was the world duathlon champion. What kind of habits or practices set you apart or set top athletes apart, do you think? What separates the really elite, truly elite athlete from the person who is just one step down?
Yes, I think the truly elite athletes and the ones who go on to be successful have clarity in their goal, which creates clarity in their purpose. I would say if you were to analyze, you know, what are the consistent traits against those people, they work out very quickly and they surround themselves with people who are on the same pathway and not necessarily people who just agree with them, people who are willing to challenge them. And so they surround themselves with people with a common goal. And then the big thing for me is they make that process simple. There's this notion, or I've seen this notion where people are successful. There's this presumption that maybe they have an ability to create something that's more complex and better, or there's more people involved, or there's more to the equation. And for me, what I've seen and my experience has been with the very top performers is that it's the opposite. They've actually created, they've got something that's complex and they've worked to pick the simple pieces out of that to keep it simple. And so, it's not saying that the process is simple and easy. It's just they've been able to filter out the stuff, create a hierarchy of what will really make a difference, and then simplify that process. And I think, you know, something like that, and with a clear goal, and obviously in conjunction with what is very, very high ambition, are some of the traits that set those people apart. And then when you add on top of that for an Olympic athlete, that is actually once every 4 years, for me, there's a patience piece that comes into that as well. And so, and some of those actually, when you put them on paper, they tend to collide, or they look like they could collide. You know, and there's this analogy of, you know, hurrying slowly. But, and I've talked about a lot of things there, but I guess, you know, what I'm trying to do is kind of conceptualize, you know, what goes on with these individuals and then what goes on around them to make sure that, you know, if it's an Olympic athlete, that one day, and for some athletes who compete in a short distance event, that might be less than 10 seconds. Once every 4 years where they have to be at their best, they obviously find their way to do that. And the thing that I've noticed and the thing that I guess I've subscribed as a coach and a leader of those athletes is simplifying that process and keeping it simple. And then obviously all the traits that they bring around their motivation make some of that quite easy to then implement and continue.
How much of when you coach and you're helping them on a pathway, sometimes you're challenging them and sometimes you're guiding, you're putting forward a training program. And how much, you know, in today's world, kind of the business coaching, life coaching, that has really emerged. And one of the key elements there is kind of to trigger self-awareness in the person. So it's not just, you know, putting something in front of them, do this, do that, but really triggering kind of a journey for the person that they're changing and adapting and learning along the way. How do you see that balance kind of guiding and teaching versus just allowing the person to become more self-aware and kind of changing internally and learning?
Yeah, the way I approach that, again, it's for me, the first step is acknowledgement. I think as you work through any field for a long period of time, you obviously gain experience and you gain confidence. And I think once you get to a stage, especially as a coach, where your self-confidence is high, you realize that you have the ability to make sure that the athletes don't become dependent on you. And so when I'm guiding the athletes, I'm also teaching them. It's not just directives to follow. There's obviously directives with an understanding so that they actually have the ability to create some autonomy and so that they're never dependent on me, because I think it's important for their personal awareness and their personal growth, because most of the athletes I work with, sport is a very small period of their life. And I would like to think that the lessons we learn in sport on top of the success set them up to be successful beyond life. And I think very rarely do you find yourself in a position outside of the sporting environment where you have a coach who's maybe with you 8 hours a day, who's giving you directives. And if you coach like that with an athlete, my philosophy has always been, well, you're setting them up to fail, because that's not going to happen once they finish sport. And so that educating them and allowing them to put some of their own autonomy into the mix is a key piece. And, you know, with the aim, it's almost an aim, like as a coach, I'm almost trying to make myself redundant to a point, to the fact that, you know, they don't need me. They want me as part of their team because I bring value. But they don't need me as part of their team. Through the process from, you know, working with them over a period of time, I've directed them, but I've taught them. And they've learned through that period where they could self-direct. And then my involvement comes, you know, it allows me to actually expand on my skill set and where I have an influence, not just on the fundamentals. And so I don't know if I've created a good picture there, but that's certainly the way we operate. So that, you know, and the measure of success is that, you know, I can say to these athletes, look, you know, I can come to this session, but it's not a key session, or I could stay at home and be working on another area that will make you better. And when they're like, no, we've got this, we can run this session, this isn't a critical piece, we understand what you need to do or what you want us to do and what your expectation is of us, then it creates the perfect relationship, because it means that I don't become redundant at that session. I think it helps with their self-esteem, their autonomy. They have to have, they're demonstrating that they have learned, not only have they learned, but they can implement what they've learned. And for me, it allows me to go and work on another area that's purely aimed at making them better. So that's the approach I'm always trying to take with the short term in mind and the long term in mind at the same time, so that, you know, it enhances their sporting aspirations in the short term without, you know, doing any harm, but it also enhances their, what happens after they finish their sporting careers, which is, you know, it's inevitable in sport.
That's fascinating. I noticed you use a term that you mentioned it on the triathlon show and here as we've spoken here. You talked about the team and, you know, you're the national team coach, but you also have a team of athletes from different areas as well. And so triathlon by nature is a singular sport. What does it look like to say that they're in a team together somehow?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, again, it's a concept. And I'm a very visual person, so I'm someone who often puts things down on paper and I kind of try to get an understanding of how it looks. And then I try to get an understanding of, well, if that's how it looks, is that how I'm going to implement it? And so when you put triathlon down on paper, it's an individual sport. The success is individual. It's very individual in nature as far as the three disciplines. But there's very few triathletes are successful without, A, having a team around them of, you know, whether, I don't like to use the word expertise, but it's, I think it's a word that, you know, that people relate to. They have this team around them of quality people who will make them better. But they also have a team, they need a team around them of fellow athletes, whether they be triathletes or whether they be individual discipline athletes, to make the amount of training and at times the monotony of training and the inspiration of training better. And so you have these two concepts that kind of clash. So you're looking at individuals who receive an individual award, but who need to operate with some of the concepts of team without the reward of team or without the outcome of team. And I think, again, the first step for me is to acknowledge that they're two very different things and they're two things that potentially clash as opposed to work well together. But there's a necessity for that to happen. So it's just a matter of finding the mechanism to make that work. And I guess one of the things that Triathlon Canada did and the previous performance director, Libby Burrell, had the foresight to do was to acknowledge that while these international athletes who I coach could be perceived as a threat, they actually also add value to our Canadian athletes. You know, and one of the challenges we have with just coaching Canadian athletes is the top Canadian athletes don't like to train against each other. They see themselves as rivals. And so it's just bringing in different elements to try and create, I guess, what you would see as the mechanisms for how a team sport would work, but acknowledging that, you know, there's never a team victory. There's individual victories and then balancing those pieces out, which is more about balancing the personalities and getting people to embrace the concept that, you know, sometimes you're giving something up, but if you've got the right relationship, you're also gaining something. And so there's that give and take, that piece that comes with it. And so that's the kind of approach we've taken. And I'll be honest, it's a challenging approach. It's certainly one that is still, I'm still learning a lot from it. And it's one that goes through cycles. Obviously, as we get towards an Olympic Games, the dynamics within a group, which I call a team, but it's, you know, it could be defined well as a group as well, change as the pressure rises. And so it's a slippery slope as a leader in sport, because you've got to be on top of it all the time to make sure that it's always functional. And you've got to acknowledge at some stage the individual nature of the sport will make this team or group setting potentially dysfunctional. And so I find it quite exciting, because there's never a dull moment. You really have to be on top of it. And
I can imagine.
And it's really helped. It's helped me as a coach, and I guess someone who's in a leadership position, to need to have a deeper understanding of how individuals operate and almost preempt where they're, you know, where they're going to come from or what angle they'll come from, and kind of, you know, cut off any potential conflict before it happens. So it is a real juggling act, but that's where, for me, you know, it's one of the things that I find, you know, motivational around what I do as a career.
Listening to this would be, you know, entrepreneurs, business people, professionals, all kinds of people from different walks of life. And it seems to me there's a lesson there where even if we're competitive with someone, we're still able to make each other better in some way. We're still part of a team in some way, and there's still benefit, you know, making deals together or working together. That's very interesting, that the dynamic you have with your team.
I think it's applicable in a lot of settings. I think, you know, there's a lot of traditional thought around building teams, whether that's obviously in sport or in business. And, you know, there's people who talk about, you know, you want a champion team, not a team of champions. And I would say, if you had a team of champions and you could manage them as a champion team as well, that would surely be the gold standard. And, you know, I think you see that in some of these all-star sporting events. I think they've put a glimpse into where the team is only balanced by every person who's picked to play in that, you know, that team on that day, who's come from a different individual team, is the very best. And there's this question of, well, how do you get, you know, five alpha males, for want of a better term, to all work together? And it's obviously fraught with risk, but for me, that's one of the most exciting things, because when it happens, it changes the paradigm of the performances that are available. And so, again, as, you know, from a leadership perspective, it is fraught with challenges, and it's not always successful. But when it works, it's a game changer for one of, you know, I don't like to use that cliche, but it really is. And so, again, that just gives an insight, I guess, into the way we're thinking and the way we're working, and what I'm personally trying in the sporting domain, and the things I talk about when I speak to people in business or who are entrepreneurs and trying to, you know, they're trying to be the best, and they're trying to navigate exactly what they need to be the best. And they're trying to navigate, you know, the downside, you know, recruiting amazing talent is obviously positive, but there's also a flip side. And how do you get multiple incredibly talented people to actually gel and operate together?
Can you tell us more, as I was kind of learning more about you and your career, about the multi-sport brain in your company, in your team? What's that about?
The multi-sport brain is the name of my business. And the concept from the start, it was a name I just came up with when I first started coaching. And it was an awareness very early on as a young coach that it was going to take, if I wanted to be successful individually as a coach, and that would be measured by the success of athletes, then I wasn't going to be able to do it alone. I was going to have to create a group of individuals to work together to enhance athletic performance. And so this notion of brain is a little bit about the learning process, and it's a bit about, it also kind of, I guess, portrays that there's more than one part to it. And so, you know, people ask me, you know, are you the multi-sport brain? And the answer is no. The multi-sport brain, and it's not a fixed group of people. It's a group of people who I bring in depending on, you know, the situation, the scenario, and who I'm working with, to create a collective. Because I've bought into this concept very quickly and very young, that as good as I could be as an individual, it would be nowhere as good as, you know, surrounding myself with a group of exceptional individuals. And it also allowed me to concentrate on some very specific things. And so, again, I was adamant that I wouldn't become, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. So obviously the multi-sport piece stands for itself. It means that in theory, the process that we use and the people we use could be applied to any number of sports, not just triathlon. And the brain piece being that, you know, acknowledging that, you know, it's formed by many pieces and different pieces, and it's a thinking and learning process. You know, I'd like to think that if you were to call us an organization, we would be a learning organization, and obviously having a group of people enhances the ability to learn, but it's underpinned by that philosophy as good as, you know, as good as we think we are, or as good as the performances we achieve, we can be better, and we can be better by working as a collective and learning along that process.
Continual learning. Love it. And so they can get in touch with you through the multisportbrain.com. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. Just stay with me on the line as I close off here, but thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a great time, and I personally have learned a lot, and I've got a lot of notes and a lot of reflection to do.
What a great interview. It was just a privilege talking to Jono. He's humble, gracious, he's friendly, and it's really cool to see how he has these different qualities and they lead to such world-class success. And I loved his unique perspective in sport about the multi-sport brain, about learning and continual learning. It was interesting also to see how he works with his athletes to cultivate like a greater self-awareness so that they're not finished when they finish sport. They're more independent and they can move forward with some of these lessons beyond their athletic careers. Working with people to overcome their obstacles is inherent to coaching, and the exploration of self-awareness is an inherent part of that as well. If you want to learn more about this, please go to my website, evolutionofleaders.com. I am a coach and speaker, and if you'd like to explore more about coaching, I would love to hear from you. If this was helpful or interesting to you, please share, like, and subscribe. It's much appreciated. And remember, create a learning moment from whatever situation you're in. Have a great one.